tech. Like, you got to have ad tech these days, as third-party data sets are coming more expensive and less effective. Having ad tech is super important. So, you know, shameless plug for Sprinklr, as we sell an advertising platform for social advertising, and it allows us to do campaign tagging across multiple channels. So like LinkedIn, Facebook, Twitter, we can say this was, you know, the fall 21 campaign for advertising platforms. And we can tag that and roll up reporting across multiple platforms. And like, most people are like, yeah, I can do that with UTM. Like, yeah, but you can't do that with impressions and clicks before they get to your site, because UTM.
You're listening to the Marketing Millennials Podcast. I'm Emily Ferguson.
And I'm Daniel Murray. Get ready, because we're taking you on a journey with today's marketing leaders and tomorrow's top stars.
Let's go!
No BS, just a fun, unfiltered industry conversation with the game changers behind some of the coolest companies from around the globe.
The one request we tell our guests?
Stories or didn't happen.
A big welcome to our marketing fam.
Prepare to turn the f*** up.
This episode is sponsored by Rebe, the marketing analytics platform that gives you answers instead of more data. If you're looking at boosting conversions and understanding where you're going wrong, then you have to check out Rebe. No more wasting time on Google Analytics by looking through irrelevant data. Now you can get to the crux of your tracking and measuring efforts in just a few simple clicks. So how does it work? After you connect Rebe to your or your client's site, everything is tracked and analyzed automatically. That means whenever you launch a new campaign, landing page, promotion, or piece of content, you don't need to worry about those annoying tracking codes. You'll immediately have all the data you need in a user-friendly dashboard. Also, Rebe lets you create conversion funnels in just a few seconds. And you get to see how your visitors behave through these flows on your site. They also have cool integrations with platforms like Facebook, HubSpot, MailChimp. So make sure you check them out. They have a 7-day free trial. And the Marketing Millennials listeners get 20% off all plans with the promo code TMM20. That's T as in the, M as in marketing, M as in millennials, 20. Or you can go to aribi.io/TMM. That's aribi.io/TMM. Or use a link in the show notes below to claim this amazing discount.
What's up, Jared? Welcome to the show. Miss you. Haven't seen you for a while, but I'm glad we're getting to chat again.
I know, man. It's seeing an old friend. It was hard not to just jump in like it was one of our old one-to-ones. And I had to kind of stop and pause and remember we were going to start recording here. So good to see you, man.
I want to talk about, like, for everybody who doesn't know you, like, what's your background? How did you get into marketing? And how did you end up becoming the VP of marketing at Sprinklr?
Yeah. So my background, I started in marketing agencies. So I was doing specifically search engine optimization. So started at like a really crappy search engine optimization agency, and then went to an okay search engine optimization agency. Then I went to a really good digital agency where I spent about 3 years, and that's where I got introduced into the enterprise. And so I've been doing kind of enterprise marketing for a while. So search engine optimization kind of ended up leading into other technical aspects of marketing. So I like to think of myself as a technical digital marketer. So I really jumped in-house, just kind of wanted to get that experience at Qualtrics about a year before they got acquired by SAP, and 2 to 3 years before they ended up going public, and started doing search engine optimization there. Small team, startup, it was kind of exactly the environment I was looking for. There was a lot of stuff that needed to get done, not enough people to do it, which is a good place for when you're young in your career to say, oh, I kind of know analytics. I can kind of figure that out. I kind of know conversion rate optimization. I can probably figure that out. I can manage a website, you know, and that kind of all just adding on channels. So like taking my deep expertise in search engine optimization and adding on channels that were kind of adjacent to me. And, you know, was there for a couple of years. Eventually, you know, when you own a channel, you're at some point in your life, you're going to own a target as well. So started carrying a pipeline target, which that really got me into demand generation. Is now it was less about like how much traffic does our website get, but how much pipeline is the content or the traffic creating. And that mind shift really, I'd say, turned me into like a channel manager into like a demand generation person, which is, I think is where I sit now. So after that, I had the opportunity to work with you at Service Titan, which was a great opportunity. That was where I got a lot of media experience. And that led me to Sprinklr. So VP of Digital at Sprinklr, I oversee performance marketing, which is like all of our channels, website development and engineering and management, and then marketing operations and analytics as well. So that's kind of my remit now. I still kind of focus a lot on the demand gen. So like how, where are the leads moving? And then my like side passion project is marketing technology, just because that technical marketer in me never really went away. So like can't like, whenever I see good marketing, I'm like, wow, how'd they do that? Especially when it comes to like personalization and timely messages and, you know, unification of a message across multiple channels. I always love to like pull up somebody's website and kind of look at what Google Tag Manager is loading so that I can see, you know, keep an eye on what all the tech people are using are.
Yeah, that's, I mean, you're one of the best like forward thinking tech stack, technical, like data flow people I've worked with. How have you been seeing like the modern day tech stack evolving from what it was like having just like, oh, the marketing automation platform and Salesforce, like really your tech stack now to like, okay, all these millions of, not millions, but thousands of marketing tools that you can buy now. Like, how do you think about the modern day tech stack?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. So obviously I've been B2B for the last, you know, six years or so. And so that's kind of my focus and my experience. And I think it really comes down to like everybody tried to force, and people still do, and I'm still guilty of this, like forcing Salesforce into being a database, but Salesforce is a CRM. It's a really crappy database. And so everybody's like, more fields, more tables, and more, you know, more custom objects in Salesforce. And you know, that worked when you had a couple sources of data, but now that people are, you know, now that we're on so many channels and platforms, like having that single source be like kind of your hub or your customer source of truth is limiting a lot of companies. And so like to kind of, you know, that's a little high level. So to make that a little more practical is, you know, most what I work in SaaS. And so what I'm selling is software. And a lot of times we're working in a product-led growth environment where we have people who are prospects using our product. And those people that are using our product are telling us a lot about what they're interested in based on what they're using in a free trial or in a freemium product. And like Salesforce is really bad at capturing and making sense of all that data. And then, you know, then to your point of like all of the tools that marketers are using, like, our CEO really likes to talk. Our focus is to like unify somebody's go-to-market stack. So like all customer-facing functions. And one of the stats our CEO loves to talk about is the average enterprise, so large company, has over 90 different pieces of software in their marketing technology stack. And so that's 90 different points data could be created, or 90 different points that you need to get customer data to. And so like all that to say is like, you really need a customer data platform. And using like Adobe has one on the top of the enterprise, I think more in the startup space, like Segment's probably the most popular one. And being able to own your first party data will enable you to get that data and personalization to all your end tools. And so then it really comes down to the data flow. And as opposed to like building a snake through a bunch of different systems. So like I like to joke of like, if you're a B2B marketer, you've always been tasked with getting UTMs to the opportunity that you created. So, you know, if you're in demand generation, like pipeline and opportunity creation is generally your job. And so you run an ad and you want to know how many opportunities that ad created. Like in the old world, it was like, okay, write a piece of custom JavaScript on your site that sets a cookie to save your UTM. That pushes the field through a form. Then that pushes that field to Marketo. And then that pushes that field to Salesforce. And that pushes that field to a data lake like a Snowflake or a Redshift, and then pull that in Tableau. And so it's like every time you wanted to add a new piece of data, there's like the six different spots that you had to like make sure it all piped, and there's six different places for it to break. And so like centralizing that around a customer data platform where your data is collected in Segment, and then it goes to all six places at the same time from the same measurement, as opposed to like being passed off down like a conveyor belt, so to say. So, you know, I think that was kind of a long-winded answer to say, like, if you're still expecting your CRM to be your source of truth for everything, then you're probably asking it to do too much.
That's like the key problem too, is like also like when you're looking at systems, like do they talk to each other? How is their data formatted in their system versus other systems? How do I think about that? I wanted to also talk to you just like to give people who don't know, like what is like first party data, like compared to like third party data? Like what type of data am I getting from first party data?
Yeah. That's a good one. Cause I think first party data, third party data, death of third party data is kind of like a trendy topic right now. So like most related to iOS's recent privacy changes and kind of the death of the cookie or the cookieless future that everybody likes to talk about in marketing publications. So first party data is basically any data that you collected on your own that you got consent, or at least legal consent, from the party or the person, the user, the prospect, let's call it user in this case, to collect. So like the easiest, if you're talking about like advertising platforms, when you say like use first party data targeting, what that really means is like upload a bunch of email addresses and Facebook is going to try to match that email address to one of their user IDs and show ads to that list of email addresses. So that's kind of like the crux of first party data. And in that example of advertising, why that's super important is like as you're losing more third-party data, which third-party data would be Facebook has their pixel almost every website in the world. And they collect, when Daniel goes to Forbes.com, Facebook sees that Daniel is on Forbes.com and says like, oh, he's probably interested in business topics. And then you go to Inc.com, you go, oh, Daniel's really interested in business topics. And then you bounce over to, something else totally unrelated, like NBA.com. And they're like, oh, and he also likes basketball. And then Facebook can create an audience of like, show me people who like basketball, show me people who are interested in business topics. And then as an advertiser, I can advertise against that. But that's very different than targeting you based on your email address because I know you are interested in my company or my product. And so that's kind of the third party, first party. There's also like even more creepy things like data sources like Axiom that will actually estimate a household's annual income. And then you can license that data, upload that to a DSP or a demand side platform, and then serve ads based on that. And so that third party data is going to get a lot harder to collect with the death of cookies and more privacy regulations. Or first party data, which means, somebody filled out a form and clicked your privacy policy and gave you their data that belonged to them in exchange for something. And so, in a standard demand gen world, the in exchange for something is like an ebook or a webinar. In kind of the way that a lot of SaaS is going now, it's more product-led growth. So if you sign up for a free tool, you use that free tool. One, they have your information of like who Daniel is, where he works. They also like know what you did in the platform, if they're doing product analytics well. And so you can start to stitch that together of like, well, Daniel is using this platform and he's using these features in it. Therefore, if I show him an ad related to that feature, maybe he's more likely to talk to my sales team. And so that's like, to me, the change between first party and third party. You used to just be able to license of like, give me everybody who's interested in online advertising and I want to go sell them an online advertising product, as opposed to like, I'm going to get somebody into my product like that has, some marketing features. And when he clicks the advertising tab, I know he's interested in advertising. So that's probably once again a long-winded answer, but does that give the audience an overview?
Yes, because that leads me to like my next question of like, how do you think of like creative and like how you market to people like differently when you have like first party and third party? Because like third party, like you will be able to get your list pretty tight, like where first party, like you limited in like some of the information. So you have to let your ad do the talking, the creative do the talking, the CTA, the value props do the talking, and you have to be a pretty much better marketer to get in front of these people.
Yeah, exactly. So I think the biggest change is the audience size. When you have third-party data, you could say, let's be honest, third-party data is not dead yet. It's just that's where we're headed towards less third-party data. But you could say, show me everybody who's interested in online advertising, and you get a couple million people back in the US alone. where, and so now you got like this volume and scale game. So if you have like a decent ad, but you're showing it to, you know, a million people, you're going to get, you know, a certain X click through rate, which let's call it 1% for this sake. Now, if you get a small first party data set, so people who have engaged with your website or like met you at an event, you know, whatever it is, however you're getting that first party data, you know, you're probably talking about, instead of tens of millions of people, you're talking about tens of thousands of people. And so that served impression, you have to have a higher click-through rate, you have to have a higher conversion rate. That impression is going to cost you more, and the volume is just smaller. And so, like, to me as a B2B marketer, that lends itself a little bit more towards like the ABM funnel or the account-based marketing funnel, which is like, go after only the people that are in target, as opposed to like, when impressions were cheap and your audience was big, you could spray and pray. And so, like, more specifically to answer your question, I think that's like right message, right time becomes really important. And then cutting through the noise to make sure, like, because it's first party, you know more about that person. So make sure you're appealing directly to what that person cares about.
Yeah, that's awesome. I mean, like, I know right now it's not the same, but like the competition's getting more in the market, the spend is getting higher. So like the better ads are winning the game right now. But I also wanted to go back to the question of like, what are some like key tools you need to have in your tech stack to be successful? I know this depends on like the company, but like, what are like some tools like you wouldn't live without, like to build a tech stack?
Yeah, you know, I think that the ones that I probably started by saying, like, yeah, they're not as powerful as people think they are still like a necessity in my space, which like the CRM is still a necessity. I think marketing automation is still a necessity but less so than it used to be. Like, I think it's marketing automation is important for like, it's still where most people send emails, and it's still where most people are like, take a lead, send it somewhere else, and take the data associated with it and update statuses and things like that. So I think like the CRM and the marketing automation platform are still key. That's kind of like cost of doing business. For a while, it's been the cost of doing business if you're a B2B marketer. And so then it's like, what pieces of tech can you have that give you a competitive advantage? If everybody has the marketing automation platform, everybody's got an email nurture coming out of Marketo or Pardot or Eloqua, whatever it is. And that's where I think one area is like website personalization. And so website personalization with rich data. So now take your first party data, make sure it's accessible in your website personalization, whether that's Optimizely, Uni, and Telemize. Make sure that you have that data. And so like when Daniel goes to the website, signs up for my free trial, he comes back to my website. I go, hi, Daniel, you know, enjoying your trial? ? You want to talk to somebody? Would you like to talk to a product expert to get a little bit more? And so that's where that having that first party data. And if you have a strong personalization stack, now you're like, okay, I got data. I have a way to activate that data. Now let's get creative as a marketer to say, how are we going to use this data plus this technology to kind of target this data to do cool marketing? So I think like personalization is a must have on top of that. And then ad tech, like you got to have ad tech these days, as third-party data sets are becoming more expensive and less effective. Having ad tech is super important. So, you know, shameless plug for Sprinklr, as we sell an advertising platform for social advertising. And it allows us to do campaign tagging across multiple channels. So like LinkedIn, Facebook, Twitter, we can say this was, you know, the fall 21 campaign for advertising platforms. And we can tag that and roll up reporting across multiple platforms. And like most people are like, yeah, I can do that with UTM. I'm like, yeah, but you can't do that with impressions and clicks before they get to your site, because the UTM doesn't take place until they get to your website. And so having like advertising tech from that, you know, things like Clearbit for B2B targeting on Facebook, using first party data, you know, things, those kind of ad tech to give you the competitive advantage that people who are running just native aren't gonna run. You know, I think like LiveRamp is another example of that, or even ABM platforms that have DSPs in it, such as Demandbase, Rollworks, and SixthSense.
Oh yeah, I mean, that's awesome. And I wanted to go to the next topic, which is like, okay, you have the stack, you have all the, how the data flows, like, how do you think about like, what is like a must need for like reporting when it comes to like having a competitive advantage? Because I think like a lot of people like, okay, you can have the coolest tech stack, but like you have to be able to make decisions on like what marketing things you're, actions you're doing.
Yeah. Yeah. This is the, I'll be honest, this space needs a little bit of disruption still. I like to say like data is cheap, but insights are expensive. And so like everybody has that data, whether it's in their, you know, 90 different marketing tools of like, here's your impression data for Google, here's your impression data for Facebook, you know, here's your clicks and email in your automation platform. And like, here's all your offline sales data, like SQL, SQO, opportunity, close one, things like that. Right now there's a huge shortage in business and BI people. So like, I know, like, as Daniel, as somebody who used to be responsible for BI for my team, like, I'm sure you felt this, that there's a bigger demand for reporting and insights than you can hire for. And even if you can hire, you could like ever have time to do it. Everybody wants more data than they have all the time. And so I personally, and this might be a hot take, not a hot take, but some people might disagree with me, that I do think like a centralized data lake right now is the only way that people are going to get a full picture view of a customer journey. And so that's using a Redshift or a Snowflake, and then being able to combine spend data with impression data, with click data, with sales data is the only way that we're going to get a holistic view of reporting. And so that means you need somebody on your team that has database chops, that has BI tool tops, whether it's like Tableau, Domo, Power BI, pick your tool. Right now, I don't really see a way around that. Like, I think if you're a smaller company that's running less channels and you're like a HubSpot shop, I think you can do a lot of that on HubSpot. I think you can do, you know, there's a few tools like that where you can do a lot of the reporting in one place, you know, like even Sprinklr, you can do a lot of the reporting in one place, but there's always, you need kind of the flexibility of having a data lake because you need to be able to manipulate it post data creation. You need to be able to transform it before you go and report. And so that's one of those things that every place I've ever been, that slowed us down. And so as much as possible, it's like, can you build an underlying data set that get reused? Can you create dashboards and reports that are self-serve? And like, that's the only way for me that you're going to scale those insights, is if you can create something once that everybody can kind of self-serve off of from there.
Yeah. And I think what you made a good point is like, you can't only rely on like a BI team or something to do insights. Like, the self-service is key. Like as a marketing leader, they should be able to go into a database, see the insights and make actual things. They shouldn't like wait for someone to tell them like a decision
needs to be made. Yeah. I like to, yeah, so I'm responsible for supporting some other functions at my company, and I've had that type of role often. And you know, one of the things that I always like to do is every time somebody asks me for a report, I go look at how many log times they've logged in and viewed the last report that we built them. You know, and so it's pretty common somebody asks for something, and I'm like, hey, we already like, or like one, we you already have that. You just got to click drill in or like add a filter. You know, and so. That's, I think that I can get a little impatient personally, because I, like I said, I kind of am a technical marketer and I have been focused on data for so long that I have to realize that not everybody is the same way as me. And so what I like to do, my favorite thing is like, after you build the self-serve reporting and somebody asks you for a question, instead of like giving them the answer, be like, grab time with me. Let's go one-on-one or two-on-one. And I'm going to run through this with you. I'm gonna be like, all right, this is where you start. This is the question you want to answer. If it were me, I'd click here, here, and here. And they're like, oh, cool. You know, you save that report for them. But it kind of shows them that like, oh, this isn't as intimidating as it looks.
Yeah, I mean, that's awesome. I want to know, like, what is a realization or like insight that you've like learned in the last like 6 months that has like transformed the way you think about marketing? Because I know like, just working from you at ServiceTitan, like, you brought things that like nobody was thinking about. So I know you have like insights on like, I know like we talked about this before we got on like the topic of like product-led growth and how to use product what one thing I talked about is to also like to the, like the CEO of Sendosa, like tech stack and like data is like now more like cross-functional than ever, because like tools are being used by multiple people. It's like not like before, it's like marketing use marketing tools and sales use sales tools and product use product tools. But now it's like everybody's using the same tools to do the same, get the same type of results. Not like, like the product led, for example, like product data attached to marketing data and attached to sales data. Now like three teams could get insights from one report instead of one team.
Yeah. That's a tough one, man. I think I've like, to be honest, I've been so focused on the fundamentals lately that it's just like, I get the fundamentals right. I think, one thing that I've spent a lot of time with is we launched a product called Modern Research Lite, which is our social listening platform that's free to sign up for, which, you know, Sprinklr's traditionally served large enterprises. And so it really allows anybody to get the power of our social listening platform. And with that, that was a new motion for this company. It is really a product-led growth motion. So one, it's been just a blast to work on. Like, I think every marketer is like, yeah, I want to try product-led growth. And so getting to try that was awesome. I think what I've learned is that product-led growth isn't, or a free trial motion is not a silver bullet, which, you know, I think I've been in multiple companies where I'm like, man, if they just build me a free trial, like I'd sell this thing like hotcakes, right? And I think it was a reminder that it's still harder than it looks. And like when you have this new kind of acquisition channel or motion, you have to be able to like ebb and flow that between and kind of run up what I like to call like parallel funnels. And so I think a lot of people are kind of familiar with like, I have my inbound funnel and I have my ABM funnel, right? The ABM funnel is like straight up because you want them, you want high conversion rates top to bottom. You're going to target people very, very tightly. Your inbound funnel is probably in between. And then your product like growth funnel is like even bigger, right? So you have a lot of signups. And so trying to figure out how to transport people through those funnels. Like if you come in through product like growth, but yet, you know, you really fit our ideal customer profile, how do we transition you over into more of a high touch account based journey from there? And that kind of goes back to like having the right data. So like having the right data about the person also, because there's such high volume over here in this product-led growth funnel, it's making sure that you can pull out the gems from the noise, right? If you have 1,000 people sign up in a week, maybe only 10 of those people are good targets for your product and everybody else is students or everybody else is, you know, people in a country that you don't really have a sales force to go support. And so figuring out how to like really open the gates to your business and your product and still be able to keep the team focused on what your ideal customer profile is. So that's, you know, if I kind of summarize the like, what have I learned in 6 months is that like business models are really different. And if you want to serve multiple go-to-market models, you got to have a plan for how they're going to interact with it, because your self-serve motion is not going to happen in a silo. Your ABM motion is not going to happen in a silo, and your kind of typical inbound demand gen funnel is not going to happen in a silo. So how are you going to make sure that you maximize each one of those without like pissing off a segment or a cohort that might be in this funnel over here? If that makes sense.
Yeah, that totally makes sense. And I also wanted to pick your brain about one thing. This is a topic that everybody talks about, and I just want to hear like how you think about it right now. And how do you think about like the topic of attribution and where, how things should be attributed? Because like we talked earlier about buyer journey, how you have to map that out. And right now, like some people a lot of marketers are making, I wouldn't say like great decisions, because they think like, okay, oh, organic search made, there's a reason that my like product, like someone signed up, or it was a branded search, but they're not thinking about like, what are like the 5, 6, 10 steps before.
Yeah. How do they know your brand name to search for?
Right? Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. So I have two thoughts on attribution. One is that I'm a big fan of using whatever attribution model you used last month, right? So like, I want to see steady progress. I really, really hate it when somebody goes, but yeah, if you look at it with this model, I'm like, dude, but we don't. Like, with the same model, did you get better than last month? You know, there's another, and then there's a total other conversation to have. That doesn't mean like we value the contribution that that channel, that tactic, that team had to the business just based on this model. But there's like a measurement model. Like you set a goal against this model and we're gonna look at that month over month, quarter over quarter to make sure they're trending up and to the right. And then there's things that inform your decision. And so to me, it's like most companies are using Last Touch, which means like keep using Last Touch because you need to be able to have a historical way of comparing for doing your reporting and target setting. But it's also important not to make your decisions based on that. Because if you look at Last Touch, you're never going to do paid social that's not direct response. Like you're never going to do, Geico would never ever run a TV ad with the little gecko if Last Touch attribution was the only thing that works. And so I like looking at having indicators that help decision-making. So whether that's multi-touch or influence model, like we don't use this for reporting, but we look at it when we set budgets, or we don't look at this for reporting, but we look at it when we're doing annual or quarterly planning, or, you know, when we have to make the decision, like, should we keep spending 10 grand, 100 grand, 200 grand, $1 million in YouTube? Well, from the YouTube click, it looks like we're losing money on it, but by using some of the measurement models that we have, like segmenting, show me people who view YouTube and then search for my brand compared to the people who never saw YouTube and search for my brand. Is that a better cost per conversion? And you can, or, you know, running a brand lift study with Google, for example, like some of those indicators that would say like, I can't prove it. It won't show up in my Last Touch reporting that I'm really measuring the collective team on. But if I look at it in a silo, it does look with these other, whether it's influenced or these other data points, it does look like this is valuable to the brand. And so I guess it really comes down to just making sure that you're separating reporting and decision-making, I guess. I think that's what I'm really getting after, is you should report consistently in the most reliable way possible, but you're not going to always make your decision-making strictly off of what reporting said. You know, like if I look at like revenue contribution, like organic social doesn't look like it's that big of a channel. So maybe we should stop posting on organic social. Like I'm never going to make that decision because I know that we have a broad reach there. We're getting in front of the people. So like, don't be a slave to the data, I think is really be informed by data, but not a slave to the data.
Yeah. I mean, I love that answer because like a lot of bad spending and marketing decisions are made because they think that Last Touch model is the only model because finance wants to have something that you can measure against instead of like, okay, like let's think of like in the marketing brain, like you just said YouTube, like people in front of them, we may not know exactly that they came from YouTube, but like if we stopped in YouTube tomorrow, like would brand search go down? Would like this stuff go down? And like, I think a lot of people, what they don't do and is like, they put too much variables at one time. And like, if you're going to add a new channel, like, and you put YouTube and brand search suddenly goes up, it's not because you spent more on brand.
Yeah.
It's because you added a new channel that did something. So like, I like how you think about like being data informed instead of data, like data just making every decision you're making, because like I've seen it many times that like, okay, you have to report to finance on ROI of spending and what channel did this and what, like we should stop spending here because of this reason. But like, you know, as a marketer, that's why marketing's so hard, is like some things can't be explained. Like,
I think the finance example is a good one. And it, like, I would add a little bit of like another flavor there is like with your finance partner, it's really important, or partners, it's really important to agree early on before you start spending a lot of money, or, you know, as soon as you come into the business, like, all right, what metrics are we comfortable? Like what customer acquisition costs are we comfortable with? And to your point of like the YouTube spend is going to look bad if you look at it by itself. Are we comfortable reporting on like a blended demand gen number? Right. And so like, if organic search is killing it, like if I show somebody like organic search spend was zero, but the revenue was 30% of my contribution this quarter, they're going to be like, cool, we're just, all you can do is that. And I'm like, no, I can't, because I can't make it go any faster than it's already going. There's no spend. I have no lever. And so, like, you know, getting to, like, one tip is, like, be very clear with your external stakeholders, like, whether that's finance or executives, that, like, hey, we're going to look at this at a blended demand gen team. You got to trust me that, like, I feel confident that the less efficient things on last click are going to help driving the more efficient things like direct and organic search or branded paid search, for example. And so, like, hey, if we agree that we can report on a blended number in, like, paid channels and earned channels together, cool. That kind of solves one problem. And then also, you know, having, okay, as long as this blended number is below X month CAC payback or, you know, X return on ad spend, you know, whatever metric you decide for efficiency, I'm going to keep asking you to push my budget higher and higher and higher until we get closer to that threshold, assuming that you're in a growth business. That kind of blended, like, making sure that you don't let people outside of your organization look at one of your channels in a silo and be like, oh, that was such a waste, because you're like, oh, what about all this other stuff that was highly efficient because that was fueled by this? And then, you know, with your marketing team, you guys collectively should be looking at each channel and making that decision of, like, okay, if I get asked to stand in front of finance, if I get asked to stand in front of the executive team and defend this decision, like, is this a hill I'm willing to die on? That, like, yes, we need to be spending on YouTube because it fuels brand later.
Yep. I think, I mean, that gives a great answer, because I think a lot of people are suffering this problem that you're talking about right now, because a lot of people don't get marketing. Like, they just think it happens and people come to your site, like, miraculously. But yeah, that's a great answer. And I, one question I'd like to ask, and this probably be the last one, is, like, what are you seeing, like, most companies doing wrong in marketing, like, today?
I think this, maybe just because this one's top of mind, is, like, not having your SDR team tied into your marketing team. And I actually mean this more from, like, outbound perspective. So, like, a lot of times this happens to me all the time. I get a lot of pitches where, like, I've literally come inbound into somebody's funnel, and then I get, like, and then I'm still in somebody's cold outbound sequence. So it's like, just make sure that, like, your outbound team, who's cold emailing me, cold calling me, is in touch with what I'm doing with the rest of the business. You know, like, private case example, like, very large content syndication vendor that probably every B2B marketer here has been hit up by, you know, was outbounding to me last week. And my head of performance marketing, who would be the person that owned it, had a meeting with them 2 days before that. I just responded. I was like, dude, didn't you meet with my team yesterday, like, 2 days ago? And he's like, oh, it looks like we did. And I'm like, the only reason I responded is because I actually am interested in your product, but you gave me a really bad buyer experience, which will make me think twice about actually signing that deal. And maybe I'm using out SDR as an example, but, like, you know, if you buy a mattress online, how long are you going to keep getting mattress ads after you've bought it? So maybe that really is, make sure that your data communicates across teams for anybody who's customer facing.
Yeah. I mean, also, like, I think it's important to, like layer on, like, marketing with outbound, like, that top of funnel brand awareness, brand stuff, like, will help, like, an SDR team, like, go out and talk to people. Like, if they know who Service Titan or Sprinklr is, you can make better decisions. Like, they can, it's an easier phone call.
Yeah, totally. Along those lines, you know, I think one of my favorite things about, you know, some of our time at Service Titan was the time that we would listen to SDR calls on outbound. An outbound SDR would call, be like, yeah, I saw your YouTube ad. And I'm like, all right, marketing's not getting credit for that, but it's one of those anecdotal things of, like, it's working. And so sometimes you got to go a level deeper there. And to your point, like, marketing helping outbound is a strong motion.
Yeah. Awesome. I want to give you the last, like, minute or two to talk about, like, where people could find you or anything you want to talk about. The floor is yours.
Pretty easy to find on LinkedIn and Twitter. So Twitter handle is Dig Gardner. So play on my last name there. You know, pretty approachable there. Outside of that, you know, I'm really heads down and building Sprinklr right now. And so if you're interested in marketing, social, advertising, or care software, hit me up and we can talk about how we can help you kind of modernize your stack.
Cool. Thanks so much for your time. And this has been awesome. It's always good to talk and chat.
All right. Thanks, Daniel. As always, man, it's been a pleasure.